Hi, I'm Shanna Bennett, and I'm with Tina Tang and Corey Flowers of Debtless, and you're listening to Matter of Life and Debt. Welcome to the podcast. Hey, everyone. Hi, there you are. Hi. Excited to see you. I know. So I was thinking before this interview about how we met each other or how we even came to know of each other. Was it through Instagram? It was Instagram, right?
Yeah, I DM'd you on Instagram. That was when the Debtless Instagram was getting started. It was right before I think Corey came on board with us, but I DM'd you and then you sent me your email. And I was like, great, I love her. I'm an email girl. So we moved the conversation there and I think it's been great.
I know. And so we did some work on Instagram together and I am so obsessed with what you're doing that I thought we need to actually sit down, get you on the podcast, do this. And actually, after we worked together on Instagram, Nikki saw what we did and she was like, so we're getting these ladies on the podcast, right? I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm so happy to have you here. Let's dive in because what you're doing is so remarkable. I only knew a little bit about this concept from bumping into something that the Debt Collective was doing a couple years back with their Rolling Jubilee. But let's start with what is Debtless and what are you guys up to?
Yeah, absolutely. Our mission is debt cancellation, right? Myself and my co-founder were college students at the time when we first had this idea for Debtless. We did not have an idea for a nonprofit at the time. We actually just saw a John Oliver episode one Sunday. There was an episode where he canceled, I believe it was $15 million of medical debt on air. I think at the time he donated it to an organization called RP Medical Debt. And we remember seeing that and going, what a cool TV gimmick. That's not real. We all had debt at that time. Both of us were struggling with debt, but we were like, how cool, how fake, how not going to ever happen to us. But great thing for John Oliver to be doing. What if this is a sustainable thing we can do? What if this is actually a tool to help people get out of debt and have it not live in an episode of Sunday Night TV? So started doing a lot of digging into what were the things that made it possible for him to do that in order to cancel debt? Why was it so easy for an individual to just do that? Can we do that? So really did a lot of digging and then learned that just how predatory the industry was. I think that was really our first foray into truly how predatory this industry is for consumers, for individuals, especially for people of color. And we both had individual experiences with debt. So we knew debt was predatory because of our individual experiences. My co-founder, the whole time we knew each other in college, I saw him get just hounded by predatory debt collectors because he was his mom's power of attorney. And his mother was sick. His mother had a lot of medical debt and student loan. And they were basically calling him to get money out of him to pay off her debts to a point where they were harassing her so much. Actually, at one point, they had to just take away her phone. She couldn't have a phone anymore because it was like giving her much paranoia. Even see a phone because that meant a debt collector was coming after her. That was his experience. My own experience with debt is I financed a bunch of my college through credit cards because that was my way to live. And I can't believe any company who would give 18-year-old that much credit, but that's the whole point, right? Now they have a hold on you for the rest of your life because you're trying to pay off this balance. So we've both had so much experiences with predatory lending, but then just really learning more and realizing that some of the interest rates we were struggling with, other people were struggling with it so much more. We found out that in some parts of the country, like Texas, payday loans have interest rates over 600%. Isn't that wild? How is that a legal thing to do? But that is absolutely a legal thing to do. We also found out that debt collectors were straight up just lying to debtors that they're calling, harassing them, lying to them, intimidating them. That was something that was happening to us. That was something that we found out happening to people everywhere. And that really motivated us to do something about this. Let's see what we can actually do about it. Why can't we replicate what they did, except we won't just do it one time. We're going to make this into a nonprofit. We're going to do this continuously, really show and demonstrate to the world what a messed up system this is.
I know our debt collective friends were involved with that John Oliver episode. I think the John Oliver team reached out to them and was asking them questions about the Rolling Jubilee. So it's so interesting how that all plays into what you're doing now. So when did you start the company?
Yeah. So I think that episode first came out in 2016.
Okay.
2015. But for us, actually, we did not start trying to figure out how to actually put this together until 2019. So 2019, we were in Chicago and the Chicago's Lawyers Committee here had a small business/nonprofit program where basically if you applied and you were accepted, they provided pro bono lawyers to help you incorporate your business, because we didn't have the funds in order to do that, didn't know how to do that. I studied neuroscience in college. I did grad school in neuroscience. This is completely so left field for what I do. So that was really a big first break for us to be able to have legal help in how to incorporate as a nonprofit. We knew that we needed to be a nonprofit in order to cancel debt, because if we were to cancel debt as an individual or as a for-profit business, the debtor owed taxes to the government on the debt that was just canceled. So we had to be a nonprofit in order to cancel debt. So that was really important to us to do, but we didn't have the means to do that until this big break. I still remember the first time, I think our pro bono lawyers were SCAD and ARPS at the time, and it was the fanciest building I'd ever been in. I walked in and I was like, I don't belong here. But truly, that was our first big break in getting us started and off the ground.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's really unfortunate. I didn't know how bad the interest rates were on payday loans until I started following your page. You posted things like 300%, 600%. It's so unfortunate. How much debt have you paid off? Because I remember talking to you guys about that last time we talked.
Yeah, so Debtless has canceled almost $10 million in debt for almost 10,000 individuals. Since debt collectors are able to purchase debt portfolios online for pennies on the dollar, which is what John Oliver used in his segment, the same tactics as those debt collectors in order to purchase that debt and pay it off, we luck out from the predatory system almost, because instead of buying those portfolios in order to harass people into paying back their debt, Tina had the genius idea to just buy the portfolios and cancel it. So that is such an amazing aspect of Debtless and what we do, because we don't actually have to raise $10 million in order to cancel $10 million in debt. So it makes my job a lot easier. I mean, not that it's easy. Like Tina said earlier, we are straight hustling to raise money so we can pay back all this debt or pay off all this debt, but really puts things into perspective. And it really changed my mind about how I look at the debt industry and how a world that is debt-free is a lot more possible than people might think, because it doesn't take $10 million to cancel $10 million. So it really makes it more tangible and more believable that a debt-free future is something we can achieve.
Right.
And thank you for framing that too. I don't know if we talked about that, but that's what Debtless is doing, right? Debtless is buying debt from the secondary market or pennies on the dollar and then discharging that debt. I know in speaking with you, we talked a little bit about, and this is kind of off topic, but about that marketplace. So how do you do this? And is it an auctioneer? Is someone just like auctioning off Excel sheets of information? How does this work?
I mean, I'll take that. It actually kind of exactly what you said. I know it said kind of like a joke, like, are some people just auctioning off Excel sheets, which is actually exactly what people are doing. My first foray into this business was truly eye-opening. It was just so shocking because basically there's these listservs, right, that anybody can join. You can join anybody on the internet, anybody with a computer and an email can join these listservs where essentially the secondary debt market lives, right? And what happens is you just get marketing emails in and out of your inbox all day, every day about this portfolio for sale, that portfolio for sale. And sometimes it's outrageous. I mean, the first portfolio we purchased was for $2,000, and that was for $2 million worth of debt. At the time, I couldn't grasp what that number was. I was getting out my phone calculator to be like, what is the percentage of that? How do we just do that? Okay, great. This is great. It's just you scan this marketplace for portfolios that fit what we want to cancel. So some of the things that I typically look out for when we're in this marketplace is debt that has been charged off or has existed for a really long time. They're older debts, because that tells me these are folks who have been struggling with this debt for a really, really long time, right? And we're also looking for, in particular, shady banks or payday loans or industries that we know are dangerously unregulated and not a lot of people are talking about right now, right? Yeah. I think just only recently have debt cancellation been part of the national conversation in terms of the cancel student debt movement. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so great that it is now something that's starting to really talk about and it's becoming a household topic. But there's still really not a lot of conversation around people who get sucked in by credit lending in terms of predatory credit lenders or loan sharks or payday loans, right? I mean, one portfolio we've purchased in the last couple of years is from this quote bank. You guys can't see me on the podcast, but I'm doing air quotes. But this bank called Credit One. And if you Google Credit One, their logo looks almost exactly like Capital One, except then you look at their terms and their interest rates are upwards of 30 to 50%. They are charging fees for their credit cards. They are charging annual fees, monthly maintenance fees, just to keep your credit, whatever that means. And again, the first time I Googled them, I thought it was Capital One. I was like, oh, the Capital One Cafe ads. They're legit. They're drink on a corner, you know? And then you realize that it's not, but it's legal. And it scam a lot of people. They intentionally give credit cards to people who have low credit, who can't obtain a credit card otherwise, and they are intentionally marketing themselves in places where people have low credit, which also happens to be a lot of communities of color, right? People who can't obtain credit otherwise, people who can't obtain loans otherwise. And really, it's such a shady marketplace of different things that get popped up. And so that was one of the portfolios we purchased. After we purchased that portfolio, we literally got emailed a Excel spreadsheet. It had people's first names, last names, addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, emails, multiple past addresses, multiple past phone numbers, all of this personal information about this person that a debt collector can then use to harass you, right? Some portfolios we've seen are including social media information because they actually just legal to contact people on social media regarding their debt. So your social media handles are now in debt portfolios. Sometimes there are next of kin contact, so they cannot just harass you. They can harass and threaten your family. So all of this information literally got emailed to me in an Excel spreadsheet. And I feel like I'm doing something illegal by having it. But again, everything was perfectly legal. This is how the debt market is run. It should terrify everybody.
Wow. So I know that you brought up the national conversation about student debt and student debt cancellation. I know that with the debt collective, they're using that Roland Jubilee arm as a means of protest or as a means of calling attention to how ridiculous student debt can be. And a couple of months ago, they canceled the debt for people at Bennett College. I believe it's an all-female HBCU. And after doing it, they're like, hey, Joe Biden, this is what you could be doing too. At any point as you're working, do you feel like what you're doing is an act of protest as well or no?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think it's really highlighting just how predatory the system is, right? Corey mentioned earlier, we didn't need to raise $10 million to cancel all the debt, right? And just really highlighting the fact, first of all, debt isn't real and half of money in capitalism also isn't real. I mean, when we talk about student debt, the fact that it's been paused for so long and our country is running around just fine. I mean, it's not fine, but it's fine. Breaking down for other reasons than student loan borrowers not paying their debt. So this highlights the fact that you didn't need this money. You're just getting this money so you can profit off of us, right? Same thing with these payday loans that we purchased. A lot of these debts have been folks that have been debt for the last 10, 15 years, and they've been struggling with this. If Credit One didn't need their money back 15 years ago, they don't need it back now. The whole point is that they kept you in debt so they could keep collecting money off of you for the rest of your life. That's not you just paying back the money you owe. That's you paying back the money you owe at 600% of that rate. So I think absolutely we see this as a means to actually help individuals get out of debt, but also definitely highlighting how twisted this whole system is and how it really should be better.
I just wanted to chime in because I really do love the language of describing it as a form of protest. I think it's similar to the language that we use a lot about disrupting the debt industry because it is an industry that needs to be taken down a peg, so to speak. And it is a way of showing people that even though we've been conditioned to just accept debt as a normal part of our lives, it's just adulthood, it's just something that you have to fall into at some point, taking a stance and saying, no, this isn't normal. Debt isn't real. This isn't something that we should have to do. We shouldn't have to experience financial ruin just to get an education, to buy a home, to put food on the table. That is not something that we should just accept and just run with it like everything is everything. So I really do appreciate you calling the work that we do as debt activists a form of protest, because it really is. It's saying, no, this isn't okay. And we should be doing something about it. And we can do something about it.
Right. Because really, it shouldn't exist. There shouldn't be a company that is fighting for people by buying their debt for pennies on the dollar and then discharging it. But there is a need for you. Do you know of anyone else in the space that's doing anything similar?
I know the Rolling Jubilee arm of the Debt Collective has canceled debt, especially student loans. They were a huge inspiration for us when we first started. The organization mentioned RIP Medical Debt is also doing similar, but focused on medical debt loan. I think for us, where we really found our niche when we started was thinking like, there's activism around student loans because there's this idea of student loan debt is, quote, good debt because you got an education out of it, even though you shouldn't have had to go into debt for your education. And then there's a sense of medical debt is, again, also an acceptable form of debt because you needed a life-saving procedure and therefore you went into debt. So there's less shame sometimes, I think, around medical debt because it's something you had to do. But I think something that we found has a lot of shame attached to it are things like payday loans and credit cards, which is something we have chosen to be our focus for the time being, because there's this idea of personal responsibility and being irresponsible if you're someone that took out a payday loan, right? And we really want to dispel the myth that that's an individual problem. The fact is that most people don't take out payday loans to blow their cash in Vegas. Most people take a payday loan so they can pay their utility bill and keep the heat on until the next paycheck, right? But there's this sense of if you did that, you must have messed up somewhere in life where you had to end up going to the payday lender, and that's not okay. And that's not true. I think the other side of that is a lot of people also just don't have access to banks. We don't really talk about that, right? There's this idea of banking deserts where you can drive miles and miles and miles and not hit a bank, but you'll hit five penny lenders before you get to the bank. So if that's where you are, and of course, those are, again, predominantly poor neighborhoods, predominantly Black and brown neighborhoods, then people go into those neighborhoods and say, well, why don't you have good credit? And it's like, where was I supposed to get good credit? There's not a bank for 25 miles of me. Where was I supposed to go for this credit? The closest thing to me is a payday loan. I think those are some of the issues that we really wanted to highlight, especially as two founders of color. Those are issues that were really close to us.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And then just to circle back, so for the Debt Collective and the Bennett College, they abolished $1.7 million in student debt, and it helped close to 500 women that attended Bennett College. So that's a pretty big deal. We actually had members of the Debt Collective on the show talk about that process, but also we had a chance to say, hey, what were some of these women saying when you canceled their debt? I mean, what kind of responses did you get? I'm going to offer you guys the same question too. When you're calling folks or emailing them or however you reach out to them and saying, hey, bought your debt, discharging it, what are they saying to you?
Yeah. So we have to send people letters to tell them that we have discharged their debt. And oftentimes people don't believe it's real. And a huge battle has been just convincing folks that we're not a scam, that we're not trying to scam you. Everybody else have tried to scam you in the past. This is actually a real thing. I think that's actually been a huge part of the battle. Again, because I think student loan cancellation has been such a huge part of the national conversation, where that is now a much more accepted thing for it to happen, right? If somebody calls you because your student loans have been canceled, I feel like that's something some people are waiting by the phone hoping for every single day. If somebody calls me and said your credit card debt was canceled, they're like, oh, are you a get out of debt quick, one of those schemes, right? So I think that's actually been a huge battle for us, even establishing legitimacy amongst people that we want to help, because the industry is so scammy that people's first reactions are, this is a scam. So we're working on that. We've also had people who have reached out to us directly to ask if we can cancel their debt. And it was a really unfortunate thing that because we're buying portfolios en masse, we aren't able to seek out individuals' debt and cancel it, which we wish we could. But I think that also helps us operate as a nonprofit where we're not seeking out our own debts or the debts of our friends and the debts of our family. We are really just doing this because we want to help the industry and the system and everybody be better.
Are you reading the email I sent you last week? Is that what you're is that what you're doing? I might have sent you that in an email at some point. Please sign my debt and cancel it. Thanks.
Yeah, it's been eye-opening just have people share their personal stories with us. One story that stuck out back in April, we posted a post on Instagram about tax debt, which is something I'd really not looked into. But the IRS is a huge debt holder because a lot of people owe taxes. And actually, I didn't know this until we did this post and I really dug in and did a lot of research into it, which is that the IRS can actually garnish your wages for tax withholdings. And we did this post series on Instagram about tax debt, and somebody actually reached out and shared with us how all last year the IRS took 25% of her income for 4 months for taxes that she had already paid. And because of that, it actually put her and her mom out of their home. They lost their home. They moved in with her aunt for the time being, just so they could have a place to live. She was telling me how she literally was having dreams about the IRS hold music because she had spent so much time on the phone with them trying to just be like, you need to give me my money back. I have no home and I already paid my this. Finally, I think she had to get her senator involved in order to get this settled. I truly hope it is actually settled now, but it was just stories like this that we hear from folks everywhere where we're like, this is why we do what we do. This isn't okay.
Right, right. That's not okay. That's a shocking story. I'm taking that in. You know, in prepping for this discussion, because you landed here anyway, is a question I had, what barriers are you facing? So outside of legitimizing yourself with the folks that you're trying to help, what other barriers are you facing?
Yeah, I think on the debt purchase side, just navigating how predatory lenders are, just how shady this whole system feels and everything feels kind of illegal, and making sure that we're doing everything above board in the right way and making sure that we're doing everything we can to help as many people. And I think on our organization, we're a small organization. We're still relatively new. I attempted to launch March of 2020. So that went real well for me. The world was going to also shut down the same month that I was like, great, we're going to launch a nonprofit and do all these fundraising events. And it's going to be so great. And then the world shut down and I lost my job. Other people I knew lost because of the pandemic. And we were kind of like, oh, okay, we're going to have to do some rethinking here on how we want to structure it. I think we've gotten to a really great place this year with Corey coming on board to help us with fundraising, but we're a small organization and we don't need to raise $10 million, but we need to raise some, right, in order to cancel. So I think we're trying to figure out how to talk about establishing legitimacy, not just with those that we want to cancel, or that's who we want to cancel, but also just with the broader community and have this be a cause that people want to be a part of, want to support.
Right. And then for Corey, have you seen any barriers in terms of fundraising that you can share?
I would say yes, but I have very limited experience so far. I've been with Debtless for 3 months now. We're officially coming up on my 3-month anniversary.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, very exciting stuff. But so far, it really has just been trying to reach out and branch connections. So I'm really, really glad that we were able to make the connection that we did, but really branching out and making connections with other organizations, activists, and individuals that are doing this type of work. Because I really think that making those connections are what's really going to put us on the map and allow us to build the sort of donations that we want in order to cancel the amount of debt that we want to eventually cancel. So just navigating that space and trying to create connections without actually being in person has been an interesting experience. And luckily, I have some experience because before Debtless, I was just jumping from political campaign to political campaign.
Right.
And so from 2020 until now, much of the political organizing that I did was completely virtual, which went against everything that I'm taught as an organizer about building interpersonal relationships. So I'm trying to lean on that knowledge and apply it here. But it has created some barriers just for me personally. But I do think that just with the relationships that I've made so far, just within these past 3 months, that we can only go up from here. And I'm really, really excited about the future of Debtless, and just having this opportunity to grow with an organization like this has been really amazing. So I'm grateful to Tina every day. I tell her how amazing she is all the time. And even earlier today, I was telling her how in awe I am of her. Even starting this organization during the pandemic and growing it to where it is now is amazing. Because I remember my mindset in the bulk of the pandemic in 2020 was I'm just trying to work and not have a mental breakdown every 5 minutes. The fact that you were able to create what you have and cancel as much debt as you have is amazing. So despite the barriers, I do think that we can really only go up from here. So I'm really excited about the future of Debtless and being able to grow with that.
I love that. I was going to bring up your political past too, because I feel that feeds into this. Because Tina, don't you have some political organizing background as well?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, I went to school for neuroscience and I hated it. I was like, this is not for me. And actually, debt played a huge decision into it because I come from an immigrant family. So I was told very early on that a college degree was never going to be enough. Need a post-college degree. That is the definition of success for me and my family. And at the time, I was genuinely looking into, okay, what can I do? What degree can I get and not go into more debt? So I ultimately was really lucky because grad school and academic sciences pay you a stipend, and actually tuition is for. So the program pays for your tuition. They actually pay you a stipend, which is not a living wage, but it was better than nothing. So that was a huge decision for me. Actually, debt played a big decision into choosing a career, which ultimately I was like, wow, I hate this. This is not worth So really made a pivot, jumped into politics, which is something I had always loved. Civic organizing for me, coming from an Asian American community where civic engagement is historically low, right? API groups do not vote. And I was someone who was always like, mom, dad, here's a voter registration card, fill it out. We're all voting, family voting day, right? This is what we're doing. That was always a huge part of who I was. And I never imagined that was something I could do and do for a living. But really, it was the horrors of grad school that I was, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go actually pursue something I love because it just can't be worse than this. And here we are.
And here we are. So since we've landed on education for a bit, what are your experiences with student debt?
So I can speak to mine a little bit because my experience with debt in general has solely been student debt, which I feel very lucky for that. But the position that I'm in right now is that I'm also lucky to depend on my parents to house me for the time being while I am paying my loans back and just continuing to try to stay on a good financial track. It is something that I've seen is becoming more and more common. From my perspective, student debt has made it very, very difficult to actually move out into this new one. And I am only in a really, really good position where I can still stay with my parents. I have really loving and supportive parents. You would never kick me out for anything. So being able to live with them has definitely been a privilege that I'm really, really grateful for. But at the same time, I'm seeing this pattern, especially with people my age. I'm 24. I'm just getting started in my career, so to speak, and I'm trying to figure things out. And I feel this burden weighing me down and preventing me from doing that. So I feel this is becoming a reality for a lot of people who have recently graduated college within the last 5 years, who really, really want to create a comfortable living situation for themselves. We're not able to do that. And this is something that I hopefully am seeing for myself within the next 5 years, but I'm looking at my financial situation with student loans and then also the economy. And I don't know if that's something that's feasible for me, but right now, I guess really my top priority, and it is something that shifts your priorities around. And mine really is just building a cushion for myself, so to speak, so that I can continue to be in an okay financial situation. But it is something that is constantly on my mind. How am I going to ever get out of this situation? I don't know if it'll be within the next 5 years or even longer than that. So it is just putting me on pause a little bit in terms of my own development professionally, personally. But that has been generally my experience just within the past almost four years post undergrad. And it also has affected my decision making in terms of, do I want to pursue grad school? And immediately I was like, absolutely not. It'll never happen. Not taking out loans for grad school. So that is something that I do hear a lot from other people that I've just spoken to in my age group, just trying to figure out those next steps. I'm already dealing with undergrad and putting grad on top of that would be crazy. So just in terms of professional, personal development, student loans have definitely become a burden. And it's just something that's constantly on the forefront of my mind when talking about my personal and financial decision making.
And that's something I know we try to highlight a lot, because I think when people are opposing student debt cancellation or student debt reform, there's this concept of the folks that are complaining about the industry, there's this concept of us being lazy or not wanting to repay our debts or not being responsible. But when we say that we wake up in the morning fully aware of how much debt we have, it is at the forefront of our minds. And the goal is to be responsible citizens that are offering some form of value. So we're not just out here being wild. And usually people that we talk to about this are like, I think about it all the time. It stresses me out. It makes me anxious. I'm budgeting all, just pointing that out. We're not wayward citizens.
Yeah. Tina and I have been talking a lot about the language that we use when we're talking about debt and being more inclusive and being more understanding of people's situations when it comes to debt and falling into debt. And I think that there is this mindset surrounding it where even if people are burdened with debt and still having a good time and doing things and buying things that aren't necessarily needed, that's still okay. Having debt shouldn't mean that you just become a hermit. You never go out. You never see your friends. You never eat out. That shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be the mindset that we're operating from when we think about who is deserving of debt cancellation. And even just using the terminology debt cancellation, which is something that Tina brought up to me that I had never thought of. When we use terminology like debt forgiveness, it implies that that person is guilty of something and we have to forgive them. Whereas debt cancellation is more like, no, this is an industry that is predatory, that is set up to see you fail. And so we should just cancel it off GP. It's not something that you need to be forgiven for. It's not something that you have to atone for. And if you are in a situation where you're struggling financially due to debt, it doesn't mean that your life should just stop completely. You are still worthy of debt cancellation. You are still worthy of having that financial freedom.
Exactly. Especially too, when you realize that the average borrower is taking, at least for student debt, is taking about 20 years sometimes to pay off their debt. So like, you're going to eat out. I'm sorry. In the 20 year period of time that you're paying off your student loans, you're going to eat out. You're going to see a movie. You're going to have other expenses that aren't going to look on paper or completely necessary, but you also have to live. So I appreciate you saying that. And then Tina, you touched on your experience a bit with student loans, but what has your experience been with student loans?
Yeah, I think echoing off how Corey started is just, I think I'm in a really fortunate situation right now where I am not currently dealing with any more student loan debt, which is great. But what I am still actually paying off now, which is what I mentioned earlier when we first started, I hate sharing my age. I'm turning 30 this year. It's going to be great. I'm hearing things, so I think it'll be fun. But I am still paying off credit card debt that I had when I was 18. Living expenses was basically, I'll swipe my credit card, it's going to be fine. And it's not fine because it's been 10 years later now and it hasn't been fine. And again, I feel like people have exactly what you guys are just saying. This idea that, oh, you must have been partying and you're buying stuff that you didn't need. And did I go to a party? Of course I did. I went to college. But most of that credit card went to food, right? Cash is for rent and utilities, right? That's what I was paying off. I mean, I was literally telling Corey earlier that I went to college in New York and I lived in a one bedroom apartment with two other girls. People have this idea that if you have debt, you must have just been wasting your money. And it's not true. And also the fact that we don't offer any financial education to anybody really in this country, right? My high school had home ec. I was like, what was I ever going to do with sewing a dress on a doll? Great. But what I really would have liked to know is what an APR rate was, which I didn't know when I got my first credit card. Nobody told me what it meant. Nobody told me what compound interest meant. And even when you have an interest rate that's for a credit card, let's say 20%, and you're like, okay, that sounds high, but reasonable, even though it shouldn't be reasonable, you forget that that's actually compounded on top of paying interest on your interest on your interest on your interest, right? Which is why it takes so long to pay off debt. So anyways, 30s are looking great, but that's what we're working on right now.
As a very wise old 37, I should say that the 30s are great. They're great. Something magical does in fact happen in your 30s. It's awesome. So welcome. And now that I'm looking to 40s, I've also heard really great things. So we're leaning into it.
That's good to hear. I'm glad I have a lot to look forward to.
So I guess the next question is, and I feel you touched on this, if it feels redundant, let me know. But I wanted to ask, how has this work affected how you feel about debt? Has it changed it or has it just reinforced the ideas that you've had before about the predatory nature of the system?
For me, it's definitely evolved it a lot. Even just today, my mindset about debt is just changing every single time I have a conversation with Tina or every single time I engage with a new aspect of this position that I'm currently in. And so I have really been able to imagine a future, like I mentioned earlier, without debt, which is something that I never thought that I would be able to say. And it's something that I never really put that much thought into because it just seemed so far-fetched. It was just the mindset that we will never be in a situation as a country where people are not struggling financially. And now I do have hope, you could say, for the future in terms of people not struggling financially, paycheck to paycheck, having to take out payday loans just to put food on the table. Just that concept now to me saying it out loud sounds absolutely ridiculous. And being able to look at it in that way is something that is a really amazing aspect that has come out of working for Debtless for just these short 3 months. So I definitely am excited to just continue to grow my understanding of debt and the debt industry and how predatory it is and put a name to how I've been feeling about my place as a woman of color under the current financial situation that we're in as a country. As a woman of color, it was very difficult to come to terms with the fact that debt and the debt industry is just another way to marginalize people like myself. That is intentionally done. That is something that is overlooked a little bit, I feel, in some debt activist spaces. It's getting better, definitely, for sure. But what Tina was talking about earlier in terms of the types of debt that we aim to cancel at Debtless is trying to be more inclusive and look into types of debt that are affecting people of color the most, that are affecting marginalized groups across the board the most, because those are the people that are hit the hardest. People in low-income communities, people who are in the most vulnerable situations will be taken advantage of the most by the debt industry. And so recognizing that, being able to name that, has really changed my perspective and made me realize that this is something that just across the board should not exist. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it's not a moral dilemma on part of the borrower, but it really is just the system as a whole. It needs to be dismantled 100%. So yeah, that's where I'm at in terms of how I view debt. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And I am looking at debt now as a workers' rights issue. It's wage theft. How this is all coming together and how they all inform one another is something else that has really been weighing heavily on me. So I definitely think that looking at debt from that perspective too is really important. And I'm glad that people are bringing that up and starting to talk about that more.
I love how much research and how much data is now available in regards to how many women are holding various debts and how many women of color are holding various debts. And that way we can actually try to understand some of the issues that we're seeing. And we know that women are holding the most student debt. We know that Black women are holding higher student debt balances. And so that's actually very helpful information to know when we start talking about why the system is not functioning as it should.
On what Corey said with wage theft, the flip side of that is if we were able to cancel debt, we can consider that giving everybody a raise. Right. I automatically deduct a portion of my paycheck every 2 weeks that I know is going to go towards debt. Right. That's not even money that I'm budgeting for, because that's not my money. That's money that I know is going to go immediately from this account into that one. And it's not my money. And just the thought of, could one day my entire paycheck actually be my money? What does that feel like? When you get an offer letter from a job and you actually make the amount of money that they said you were going to make, what does that feel like? I imagine that feels pretty nice. Again, we put this big moral question on debt of people are lazy and people aren't paying it back and people aren't doing this and people aren't doing that, when it's all this other stuff that you guys have already been talking about. People who don't endorse student debt cancellation but will endorse raising the minimum wage, same thing. Well, God forbid we help people in multiple different ways, you know? Yeah, Corey got me thinking about that, but we should go back to dismantling capitalism.
Yeah, Nikki and I've had conversations about the moral application when it comes to lower and middle class folks, when it comes to debt and borrowing versus there's a group of people that they borrow, they don't pay back, they take on more debt, and it's thought of as being business strategy or wealth management. But for some reason, when it comes to lower or middle class folks, it becomes an issue of morality. And I think that's really interesting. Anything else to add? Anything else anyone wants to share? I know the big thing I want to add for you is, how can people find you and how can they give, how can they donate if they feel compelled to do so?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Debtless for All, and it's four spelled out F-O-R. And you can also just visit our website, which is debtlessnfp.org. And on our website, you'll find tons of information. You can subscribe to our newsletter. So we do send out emails weekly. I'm just updating you on news regarding debt, about the things that we're up to. So if you want to sign up there, you can stay up to date on everything that we have coming up and support our work and the different ways that you can support our work. We also have avenues on our website where you can share your own personal story if you're comfortable. We would love to hear from people who have experiences with debt and how that has impacted them. Or if you are someone who has had debt canceled by Debtless, you could share your story with us about how that has impacted you and how that has added better quality to your life. That's something that we would love to hear more about. So yeah, definitely follow us once again at Debtless for All on Instagram and Twitter, or check us out at debtlessnfp.org.
That's awesome. Thank you. We're in July right now, but come Christmas time, if anyone is feeling charitable, do not forget our friends at Debtless. And then if you're listening, we'll have links to Debtless on our site as well, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thank you so much for being here. You guys are doing so many awesome things. I love the fact that you exist. I love the fact that we had the opportunity to connect this. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the podcast. Come back anytime with updates. Come chat with us, okay?
If you like this episode of Matter of Life and Debt, subscribe and share it with a friend. It really helps people discover us. Matter of Life and Debt is hosted by me, Shanna Bennett, and created by Nikki Nolan. It is produced by Emma Klauber, Talia Malay, and Shanna Bennett. It is edited by Talia Malay and Nikki Nolan. Transcripts and social media writing is done by Emma Klauber. Our theme music was created by F.A. Achman. Visit our website, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen to more episodes, access transcripts, and get additional context for the subjects you just heard about. Absolutely for free. The website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.